Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
All right, welcome to the Side Action Podcast, Episode 6. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter.
And this is Steve Action Roberts. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
You can follow us on Twitter at Side Action Pod. Hey, so Steve, you missed the big weekend, didn't you? You went down to Purdue this weekend?
Yeah, I was down at Purdue University in good old West Lafayette to see the Boilermakers get their first victory of the season over Boston College.
Yeah, that was a big upset. Boston College was in the top 25.
We handled them pretty good. I think we had a little bit of turnover luck, but I was impressed by our defensive performance. Finally, they showed up in a football game this year. So how did the Shockers game go up here in Chicago?
Well, as you may have heard from your cousin, I got him to come out of retirement for one game at least. And he got back at QB1 and lit it up. We won 44-8. It was a complete demolition of the poor team there. Sorry, Steve, it looks like you're not going to be quarterback anymore.
So you're saying I'm getting the yank?
Yes, you got Tyrod Taylor.
Well, thanks for telling me in person, Coach Jackson.
Yeah, Mikey was on fire, as you can imagine. I rolled out the play sheet, which I created that week, in a laminated page, and it clearly went right in the bag because you know how Mikey plays, huck and chuck football.
Can I still be the backup quarterback?
Sure. Maybe. Anyway, I thought you were going to invite Buddy Joe, too. All right, so let's go over this week's episode. First, we're going to do a little recap. We're going to do the legislative updates. And then we're going to do a little recap of the head-to-head. Jump into the NFL, look back. And then we'll go forward with a little mailbag. We've got a couple questions again. That's awesome. Then we have the college recap and look ahead. And we'll jump into our NFL picks this week. And then we're going to have a couple other, you know, we'll do the head-to-head segment, and then we'll also talk about the Ryder Cup and soccer. That's quite a full show today.
Yeah, we'll see if we can pack it all in here under the time limit.
Yes, we got to pay for the space in the studio in your condo. You know, we didn't talk about it last week because it happened, I guess, in real time with the pod. FanDuel, they decided to finally pay the money to that guy, huh?
Yeah, so I don't know if the listeners saw the story, but FanDuel has a sports book that they opened up inside the Meadowlands, coincidentally. And during week two in the afternoon slate, there was one, actually more than one, couple bettors who saw the odds pop up for the Denver Broncos at 750-1 to win the money line as they were getting into field goal position late in the game to kick the game winning field goal. So they frantically logged in, or it might have been even over the counter. And one guy in particular made a $110 bet that would have paid him $138,000.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is something that we were talking about before. There can be inefficiencies in the system. And I heard that this was an algorithm by a computer that spit it out somehow. I'm sure whoever works the computers is fired now. But yeah, at first they weren't going to pay off those guys. And obviously the state legislative board in New Jersey came down and said, you got to pay it. So they had to come make good on it.
FanDuel's argument was that it was clearly an error because, according to them, the odds should have been closer to 1-6, which would have paid the bettor about $18. So as it turns out, they made good on the bet, and rightfully so. I mean, a bet made is a bet made everywhere else in the world. So right. I'm certainly happy that FanDuel paid out the $138,000.
That's awesome. I mean, we can't go to the window and say, oops, I made a mistake. I didn't mean to bet XYZ team. So why should FanDuel or any other book be able to do the same?
Yeah, that was my argument the whole time. Do you think that if it were the other way around, FanDuel would have refunded the bettor his money?
Never.
Yeah.
Hell no.
And I also want to point out, it just goes to show that some of these new states and these new corporations that are trying to get into sports gambling still have some kinks to work out in their systems.
Yeah, I did listen to VSiN this past week on this topic. What they were saying is these things happen sometimes, but a lot of times the books do end up somehow put a case before the, you know, the regulators to try to sue or something like that to get the money back. But I think in this particular case, the general consensus is that it's goodwill and good marketing that they actually came through on this bet. So now people may trust FanDuel better in this particular case.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it definitely goes toward their public sentiment, I'm sure, and the perception of the public. It'll go a long way eventually.
Yeah, you got to trust who you're giving the money to, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's recap the head-to-head from last week. Looks like America's underdog is coming through.
Yeah, you've taken an even larger lead on me now. You're up 14-6, and I have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the first game, you know, we had talked about it. Alabama is clearly the best team in the country. There's no question about that. They're number one in the S&P Plus again, as they should be. I thought the number was a little big, and it looks like Alabama has a tendency to take their foot off the gas. They were up big in this game, allowed A&M to get back within whatever the final total was, 22, I guess. So it was 27 was the spread in our bet. So they clearly won the game easily, but they took their foot off the gas.
Yeah, this game could have gone either way in terms of the spread, and thankfully for Weggs and his record, it went the way of Texas A&M.
Woohoo!
It doesn't seem like Saban is really interested in covering big spreads, I must say.
He's not exactly like the Rams, is he?
No, and you'll see this week they're 50-point favorites.
Oh my God, that's incredible. They were talking to Visa today about who would, if anybody, could get within 10 points, even on a neutral field with this team. That's how good they are.
Yeah, I saw some look-aheads, too, at some of the books out in Vegas for potential national championship game lines, and I think the lowest team was Clemson at 9 or 9.5.
Oh, man, that's insane. They're good. They're good. All right, our second bet was Michigan State at Indiana. I was trying to do America's underdog there. Indiana was getting 4.5 at home. You got this one, Steve. Congratulations.
Yeah, the Hoosiers. The Hoosiers hung in a little bit with Michigan State, and I was getting a little bit scared there towards the end of the third, early fourth quarter. Indiana kept moving the ball into scoring position and really kind of failed at getting the ball in the end zone to keep this thing close.
Yeah, they threw that pick that I think was the critical play that looked like they were going to maybe score and get within the score that I needed. Threw the pick, and then Michigan State did close them out. So good for the Spartans. I do like the Spartans in general, but bad for me in the bet.
Well, that was the one W I got this week, so you can give me that one.
You did. You broke the streak. You broke the curse. But then we went into Sunday, and obviously we went with the L.A. Chargers and the Rams. The total was 48. I didn't think that was enough, so I went over, and there you have it. It went over.
The Chargers defense is definitely not as good as I thought they were going to be this year. It's clear to me that they're missing Bosa, and he can't be coming back soon enough.
Yeah, the Rams continue to be creative on offense. They just keep running their offense all game long, which is great for the overs. And L.A. Chargers, as we talked about last week, Phil Rivers was chucking it. He actually had a chance. I don't know if you watched the game in particular. They had a chance. They had a fourth down inside the 10 that they decided to kick the field goal. And instead of going for the six, which was, you know, we're only talking about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, I thought that was a critical mistake. It got the three that really didn't get them anywhere closer. I think we got them to 12 or something.
Yep.
And that wasn't enough. And they ended up losing the game. And, you know, it's too bad. But the Chargers might bounce back this week.
Yeah, I'd like to point out Jared Goff looks pretty good throwing the ball, too. Their offense has been formidable, even outside of Gurley.
Yeah, he's looked good. He's looked really good. The last game was last night, Fitzmagic against the Steelers. It was quite a game. If you watch the game, Steve, I mean, the first half, the Steelers just were dominating them. Fitzmagic threw three picks, including a pick six. I mean, Steelers at 30 at halftime, you know, so I know you bet the over in that one too, right?
I did, yeah. Unfortunately, in this little pick'em pool, I had Tampa Bay. And after that first touchdown, I was feeling good, like the Buccaneers were going to come out hot and put up 14-21 in the first half. And then, much like Chris Conte, at the end of the game, I felt like I was demolished, demoralized, and beaten into the turf.
Yeah, that stiff arm by Vance McDonald was impressive on that big touchdown. He just put him down like a child. It was like a high school senior playing a fourth grader.
I think that's a play we're going to be seeing over and over again in NFL highlights. Unfortunate for Chris Conte.
Exactly. Former Bear.
Did you see he got put on IR today?
Did he really?
Yeah. Oh. Season over. Last play of the season.
Hurt his psyche. Well, anyway, in that game, Pittsburgh did end up winning the game. Tampa pushed and scored a ton of points in the second half. Looked like they could have maybe won the game, but they didn't. They were laying the 1 point. And so I ended up doing the money line bet on my own. So I got a double win there.
Nice hit. It'll be interesting to see what they do now, whether it's going back to Winston or stick to Fitzmagic next week and here in Chicago.
Yeah, I can't see them going back to Winston this week, although I heard Cutter is keeping that secret, you know, until the day before or something. How stupid. Everybody knows Fitzmagic. He actually threw, he had 3 400-yard games in a row. That's the first time in NFL history that's happened.
Wow.
And that's pretty impressive. So you can't bench him. I mean, the Bears are going to tear him up, but.
Yeah, I think that Chicago's defense may have a little trick up their sleeve against Fitzmagic this week.
That's right. That's right. All right, well, let's jump into the NFL. The first note I put in there, it's Survivor Demolition Week. Week 3, from what I've heard, up to 85% of the entries that were still in from week 2 to week 3 are gone, including mine. As we talked about last week, Minnesota was our pick because, you know, they're playing the Bills at home, 16.5-point favorites. This was a gimme, right, Steve?
Yeah, I think I remember myself saying there is no chance that Minnesota can lose to the Buffalo Bills. And of course, what happened? They lost.
They lost 27-6. I don't understand what happened. They were either looking ahead, possibly to the Rams game, which is coming this Thursday. Or they just underestimated. Josh Allen looked excellent in this game, to be honest with you. He's obviously a rookie. He got his chance to start. He was doing everything. The guy did it with his legs. He had 2 touchdowns on the ground. He was making good throws. And I'll be honest with you, what I've heard that is that McDermott, the head coach, started calling the plays again for defense. Hmm. And since the second half of the Charger game the week before, they've been markedly better with him calling. So the Bills may not be a rollover like we had expected.
Yeah, I heard some public sentiment that perhaps Minnesota may lay off a little bit in the second half. I was actually looking to play the under in the second half, thinking that they would be looking ahead to the big Thursday night game against LA. Mm-hmm. But it turns out they started looking ahead after the opening kickoff.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. The other game we talked about as a potential was the Jags against hosting the Titans. Blake Bortles played like crap for sure. Blaine Gabbert, the revenge game, well, he got knocked out in the first half, right, with a concussion?
Yeah, I was interested to see how this game went, so I went back and watched it on the condensed replay yesterday, and it was definitely a snooze fest. Gabbert got knocked out, and Mariota came in and didn't really do much anything else either.
Right, right. So it's not like he came in and lit it up, but 9-6, and it seems like for some reason the Titans have the Jags number. That's 3 straight wins against them. Despite the Jags being so good, they're still my pick. But, yeah, that was a rough game. The other one was the Patriots. I thought for sure, and I bet on this game and lost, the Patriots at the Lions, 6.5, they got crushed. I don't understand what happened in that game.
Yeah, everyone expected the Patriots to have a bounce back week yesterday after losing that big AFC rematch to the Jaguars, and they just had another letdown. And I have to be honest with you, their defense does not look good.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be honest with you, they weren't good last year. They had to tune things up just to make it better down the stretch last year. They were probably ranked last or at least the bottom 3 for most of the first third of the season last year. So it seems like more of the same. And then obviously on offense, besides Gronk, they really don't have any targets. I mean, they didn't play Gordon. He was inactive. Edelman will come back after this week, so maybe they'll improve. But, man, the Patriots, we always think they're going to do it, but maybe not.
Do you think Gordon's going to be ready for this coming week?
I don't know. You know how I feel about Josh Gordon. I don't even know if he's going to make it to a meeting this week, but they need something. They need a boost.
Valid point.
So I'm going to do a little shout-out to a friend of mine who lives in D.C. You know, she said, you guys never talk about the Redskins. So here's your chance, Aisha, to hear the Redskins. We've got Aaron Rodgers, the Packers, going to the Redskins. We thought for sure this was a winning spot for the Pack. Apparently not. AP ran all over them.
Yeah, the Redskins easily covered over the Packers, and Randall Cobb had a few key drops late in the game and just didn't look like he had his head in the game.
Yeah, I've heard some reports, and we'll have to double-check this, you know, later in the week, that there's a possibility Rodgers could sit out a game to get healthy, because I understand he was kind of hobbling around in this game. So maybe, you know, all that adrenaline from week 1 into week 2, maybe that playing on that bad knee was a bad idea after all.
Interesting. That'll be something to keep tabs on this week as they host Buffalo Bills as 10.5-point favorites. That could be another good number and spot for Josh Allen.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, let's talk about the battle for LA. That was the Rams-Chargers. We kind of discussed it already in the pick'em, but what about the injuries in that game?
Yeah, I think the key to take away from this one is the LA Rams' injuries in the secondary. Both Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib have been ruled out for multiple weeks with various injuries. And I think that could play a factor on Thursday night as they host Minnesota with their receiving core.
Yeah, you got to think Minnesota is going to try to bounce back in that spot. They look terrible, although I don't know if you heard the reports today that their star pass rusher, Everson Griffin, mm-hmm. has had to do a mental evaluation because he's not acting right. I'm not sure what that means, but he has to pass the evaluation to play on Thursday, and I don't know if he has enough time to do it since we're on Tuesday now.
And how about the Miami Dolphins? They looked electric in that comeback against Oakland Raiders on Sunday.
This is the third time Oakland has dropped a lead in the second half. I'm not sure what's going on. Chucky's got a good script to start, but he can't get his team to finish. Jakeem Grant, man, the guy's got two big touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, Jakeem Grant is one of the fastest players in the league, and I think it begs the question to everyone in the NFL Football League, who needs Juice Landry?
That's right. I don't know if you ever watched that show on the NFL Network. It was called Undrafted. Did you ever see that show?
No.
I watched it, I think this was two seasons ago. Jakeem Grant was on that show because he was undrafted. I think he was out of Texas Tech, super fast little guy. They were showing him do all these drills. A bunch of guys, there was like six or seven guys that were following it. It's really cool to see him hit it big in the league. I mean, to see an undrafted guy make it that big. All right, the next game was actually, to me, the most entertaining game of the whole slate. New Orleans went to Atlanta. And actually, these teams last year played a little lower scoring game at the end of the season, a 2017 matchup. But Vegas knew what they were doing. The total was up in the 50s. And this was a complete shootout.
Yeah, we expected this one to go over, and it went flying over. Drew Brees and Matt Ryan dueled for touchdown after touchdown. And Brees even ran a couple of them in with a spin move to boot.
He had the little Barry Sanders spin move to score. That was an awesome play. And he actually had the jump ahead touchdown in overtime to win the game. Both of them. I think they both scored five touchdowns apiece, so mm-hmm. it was an incredible game. It was really fun to watch.
And Patty Mahomes does it again. Three more touchdown passes this week, Wegs.
This guy is a machine. I love this guy. When I used to watch those Gruden quarterback camps, I definitely liked him last year. He's so accurate. He's a cool guy. And I love that the way they're calling plays for this kid. He is just going off. You did see Kareem Hunt score a couple times this time, so it looks like they mixed in a little bit of the running game, but to be honest with you, it's Mahomes' offense.
Yeah, I read a story this morning on SI about how he has like the ability to extend plays and really mm-hmm. goes out there and plays some backyard football. They kind of improvise a little bit, especially in the red zone. And mm-hmm. I think on one of those touchdowns, he scrambled around a little bit and found Conley in the back of the end zone.
That's right. He did on the right corner. That was a great play. And then I also put notes for the review is there were some key injuries. Jimmy G from San Francisco went down with the ACL tear. I don't know if you saw the play, kind of sad. He should have just run out of bounds. He tried to make a cut up and kind of tore his ACL and then got smashed. But I would guess that win total of 8.5 is not looking good.
Well, C.J. Beathard is a backup quarterback, and we'll see how he fares.
He started most of last year. He didn't look too good. But, we'll see. They've kind of been hit by the injury bug. It's too bad. You already mentioned the Rams corners getting injured. Mm-hmm. That could have an effect on some of these totals for the games. Evan Ingram was hurt of the Giants. He's out for a couple weeks in the medial. I think it was a medial sprain. So look for the Giants to struggle. They already have. And then I also put Richard Sherman. Not that this is a big deal, but the 49ers are going to be hurting. He's out as well. So I would look for a higher total in that game too. So we got some questions in the mailbag. In one of the early episodes, you mentioned square bettors take overs, but then I hear you picking overs in some games. What gives? Can you explain?
I think I mentioned that a lot of new bettors and public, Joe Public, take a lot of overs just because they like to see points and mm-hmm. they like to see the flashy scores. And although that is true, I will also caveat that by saying that was kind of the historical way of looking at things. And nowadays, especially with these new rules in the NFL,
right.
there may be some spots where you can get value and looking to go over in some of these games. And so I do agree that it was probably an oversight on my part just to state that as a global term, but there are some definite angles that you can take in looking at overs in some of these games, college football included.
I think you're right about the pros. I mean, we didn't even talk about it in the review, but we talked about it a couple weeks ago in terms of these roughing the passer penalties. It's ridiculous. I mean, come on. Clay Matthews is getting called for a basic sack. He's just hitting the guy and taking him down, and they're calling it for giving them extra plays, and it's working. I mean, they're getting more points every time. So I know what the mailbag is saying here, but at the same time, we're being smart about the pick.
Yeah, I was kind of half expecting Clay Matthews to pull Avante Davis and just retire on the field yesterday.
That's funny. All right, I had this question. This is my question to you, Steve, because we were talking about, you know, communicating via text, and you said that you were teasing the game yesterday. You were teasing both, if I'm not mistaken, what was the Steelers, but then also the over-under.
Yeah, so I had a couple of teasers rolling from Sunday into the Monday night game where I had taken Tampa Bay plus the 7.5. I teased them from 1.5 up to 7.5. And to be honest with you, I kind of knew that the over was a lock. So as the line on the game shifted back towards the Steelers and in terms of the underdog, and they got out to 1.5, I saw an opportunity then to tease them out to 7.5 and take the under. So I teased the Steelers to 7.5 and then the under from 55 down to 49, which ultimately gave me a huge wide open window from Tampa plus 7.5 all the way down to the Steelers plus 7.5. And thankfully the game turned out, Tampa made that comeback and lost by 3, so I won both bets.
And you mean the over, right? You said you teased the over?
Yeah, the over, but it brings that total down to 49, so it basically lowers the bar.
And what I was questioning was that I didn't know you could tease a line and a total from the same game. I thought you had to tease a totally separate game, but I guess you can tease any two bets together.
Yeah, there are some circumstances where books would not allow you to do that. For example, if there was a really heavy favorite and an extremely low total, like for example, the Minnesota game on Sunday, I think there were 17-point favorites and a 40-point total game. Mm-hmm. Those would probably be a little bit more difficult to do, especially depending on the size of the wager you're going to make too. Our $10 or $20 bets probably don't move much on the meter.
They didn't care about that. All right, well, good questions, good questions. Let's roll into the college football recap and look ahead. So we've already highlighted this game, Oregon. Man, I'm telling you, they had that game in the bag. They were going to win that game, no question.
Yeah, it was one of the worst bad beats that I've had in a really long time. I was on Oregon plus 3 and lying in bed after I got home from Purdue on Saturday watching it. And they had a 99% chance of winning the game as they were going up 31-7 in the third quarter. Turns out the touchdown was called back as the player ran into the pylon. And on that same exact drive, the center snapped it over the quarterback's head and Stanford ran it for a touchdown. Late in the game, Oregon had a chance to ice it again with a minute and a half left. They could have just run the clock out and then run their punter around for 8 or 9 seconds. But no, they went for the first down and fumbled. Stanford came down to tie the game and then won in overtime on a bobbled touchdown pass to the tight end. And I lost my bet, and the rest is history.
I don't think you're the only one. But, yeah, it was kind of bizarre, especially when they're running out the clock, why they didn't either just kneel on it or just run into the pile. Or I mean, it was – these fumbles don't happen on their own. I mean, it wasn't from the – it wasn't a center exchange situation. Mm-hmm. It was the running back who fumbled the ball. So that was tough. But, yeah, that one that was snapped – and the guy ran it all the way. It was like 80 yards for the touchdown. That was a killer.
Almost comical to everyone but me.
That's right.
How about Old Dominion upsetting Virginia Tech at home as 28-point underdogs?
Yeah, the Monarchs, man, they came to play. It looks like they had 600 yards of total offense. I don't know. Vatek apparently can't play defense anymore, so they got lit up.
Yeah, the other thing in that game was Virginia Tech quarterback Josh Jackson left in the fourth quarter with an ankle injury, and that'll be something to monitor.
Mm, okay, it's important. This is a team that I really like now. I'm on this team. I'm not necessarily betting them, but I'm watching them. It's Kentucky. Kentucky is legit. They upset Mississippi State at home, but they didn't just upset them. They beat them 28-7. They kind of beat them down.
Yeah, their defense is very legit. I think they're ranked 6th in yards per play, only allowing 4.1 yards per play. And that running back, Benny Snell, is pretty good too. He ran for over 165 yards and 4 scores against Mississippi State.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, they have this game ahead where they're going to play South Carolina. That's obviously a big game for them again. But, you know, it's too bad they're in the SEC in some ways because they have such a strong schedule that they have to go through to go anywhere. But this team definitely has come to play. They beat Florida on the road, and now Mississippi State at home. If they could beat South Carolina, this is a contender.
Yeah, all the chatter about Kentucky sports has me thinking it's basketball season already.
Yes, it is. Always basketball season. All right, the next one was Texas Tech just taking it to Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State was kind of a darling in the S&P Plus, but not anymore, huh?
Yeah, they were looking high and good off that win over Boise State, but Texas Tech took them to the woodshed. 621 yards of total offense to Oklahoma State's 386.
That is a lot of yards. That's almost like 1,000 yards in that game. That's just a lot of passing, I guess.
That's a Big 12 special for you.
That's right. And Texas Tech is looking ahead. They're going to host West Virginia. That's one of our pick-ems later, head-to-head. So it'll be exciting. That's what Texas Tech is. They're getting 4 points at home.
Yeah, last I saw was +4 on the Texas Tech side.
All right. And Michigan, you know, I dog Michigan early in the year in the khakis. I still want them to win a big game, and then I can start talking, but they just destroyed Nebraska. Poor Nebraska.
Yeah, it seems that Michigan is a little bit different team when they're playing down a level in their competition. But Nebraska just had no chance. I think Michigan outgained them on a net per play basis of 4 yards per play. And Nebraska only mustered 132 yards of total offense and 39 on the ground.
Yeah, that injury to was Martinez, right? Yeah, that's obviously showing up pretty big. And Michigan's defense is playing legit now. I think that first game of the year, they played okay. They just need somebody to score. And if they can score, they're going to win games.
Yeah, Martinez actually played a little bit. I didn't get a chance to see much of the highlights. I'm not sure if he was in the full game or not, but it did look like he was 7 for 15, I think I read, through the air. So.
Okay, he tried.
Yeah.
Next one you got is Maryland. Yeah, Maryland, who are the Terps? They decided to play this week, huh?
Yeah, they're certainly a Jekyll and Hyde team after upsetting Texas early on in the season and coming back to lose to Temple. They absolutely tore Minnesota apart, 42-13. They ran them up for the tune of 8.5 yards per play and a 482 yards per play margin.
That is a destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Gophers, they're not as good as they were in the past, I guess. And then we've got our buddy Alec Wozner. He loves Clemson. We were actually watching this game on Saturday. They started off hot, and they continued hot against Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I think they had a little preview of that triple option offense, and that helped them to victory in this one. I also noted that Trevor Lawrence was in there for most of the game, and they came out this week to name him as the permanent starter.
Yeah, he's got those long locks. He throws a good ball. The guy is he's legit. I think he was the number one quarterback, you know, in America. I saw a lot. I watched some of those Rivals shows, and I follow him on Twitter. And this kid has been pumped up for like 3 years, so hopefully he delivers.
Yeah, they won 49-21, and I noted, despite some serious turnover luck for Georgia Tech at a positive 4.7, they still lost by 28, which indicates that it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, no, most definitely. All right, so when we did a little S&P Plus review, we just talked about Maryland. They actually went up to 61 from 81, so that's a good riser. Texas Tech is also a riser. They went from 51 to 32. That's a big jump.
Nebraska, pretty serious drop down to 73 from 46 after losing to Michigan.
Yeah, Wake Forest, I mean, Notre Dame handled them, so they dropped significantly from 57 to 84. Then Boston College, yeah, they were kind of a little darling there for a minute, but they got destroyed, so they went from 17 to 41.
Yeah, that passing offense was not quite as good as they had looked in the first few weeks.
I noted that NC State is up quite a bit. They're from 49 to 29. They actually have a big game against Virginia this week. And then, you know, your Hoosiers. I know you were against me in the bet, but I know you still have a place in your heart for the Hoosiers. They drop from 23 to 45 as well. They drop like a stone. As well as Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, you know, they got crushed as well. So they went from 35 to 58. And then the last thing I want to say is, the khakis, man, they're in the top five now in the S&P Plus.
Yeah, I saw Michigan vaulted up into the, was it fourth place in the S&P Plus?
I got them at five, but maybe we have different numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, they're playing good football. Obviously, they're definitely doing the defensive thing. So, all right, so which spots are you eyeing this week, Action?
One thing that I was looking toward is Mississippi State hosting Florida. They're 7.5-point favorites, and the total is 50.5. Dan Mullen left Mississippi State after last offseason and went to Florida and left these kids in a lurch. And now they get to face off their former coach. Now, I know they're coming off of that loss against Kentucky, but part of me wants to think that they were probably looking ahead to this game against their former coach.
Okay. It's an interesting storyline. So you'd want Florida in that one.
I'm probably going to be looking at betting Mississippi State. Now, the hook scares me a little bit on 7.5, but I'm kind of holding out to see if that 7 pops, and then I'll be jumping on Mississippi State.
Okay. the old revenge game for them and the coach. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech, they are going to be at home against West Virginia. This is one of our head-to-heads later, but this is going to be another offensive fest. You put it down here as the over-under is 77.5.
Yeah, ridiculously high total.
Do they do over-unders for yards in a game, total yards?
That would be interesting. If you could find a prop bet, I would say a 1,000 or 1050 might be the over-under there.
I agree. You've got a Heisman candidate in Will Grier from West Virginia. I do like him quite a bit. He kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you remember a guy, Charlie Whitehurst in the NFL, touchdown
yep.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Clipboard Jesus. This guy could be clipboard Jesus too.
West Virginia has put up some pretty high numbers, but taking a look at their schedule, they haven't really beaten anybody yet. Their best wins come over Tennessee and Kansas State at home last weekend. Now, on the other hand, Texas Tech, although they lost to Ole Miss in week one, they come back to beat Houston and then Oklahoma State on the road last week. And I like Texas Tech to win this game, and I'll be taking the points at home, but we'll talk about it later.
Definitely. All right, so you got Old Dominion. They're going to play East Carolina at Carolina next week. So what do you like in that game?
Yeah, similar to our discussion last week, the Old Dominion as coming off this high over mm-hmm. beating Virginia Tech. They face a pretty game East Carolina squad this year. And I can't forget that big loss that Old Dominion had in week one against Liberty, 42-10. They also lost to Charlotte and FIU. Mm. East Carolina has a superior defense in this game, and I'll be looking to them as favorites at -5 to beat Old Dominion.
Yeah, I can see that spot too, and we didn't mention this in the recap, but Old Dominion, I'm pretty sure they're in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So playing Virginia Tech, almost like an in-state rivalry, there's probably kids that they know each other and different rivals on the other team. So maybe they got up for that game. So I can see this as a letdown spot for sure.
Yeah, I'd say they got up a little bit for them.
All right, Clemson. This is going to be the battle between Alec Wasner and Jason Ross because they're playing Syracuse this weekend. Syracuse has been playing great football.
Yeah, Eric Dungy, their quarterback, is pretty good. And whenever he's on the field and staying healthy, they're certainly capable of scoring. But they haven't faced a defense quite like Clemson yet. And like I mentioned earlier, Trevor Lawrence is now the starter. And their offense is just on a whole nother level when he's playing ahead of Kelly Bryant. And I expect that they're going to run all over Clemson. Right now, the spread is 22-23. Looks like it may be heading north towards 23.5 even. But I still think that Clemson can cover that big number.
Okay. So you think Clemson's going to run all over the Cues is what you're saying?
I do. I do indeed.
It's also outside the dome. They got to go down to Clemson. And I think, didn't Clemson lose to Syracuse last year in the dome?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's some payback material in there somewhere. Here's one of your darlings, Memphis. Memphis is going to be at Tulane. They're laying 14 points. What do you like about that?
Well, it's another Friday night special. The Memphis Tigers love playing on Friday night. And I was looking at the S&P Plus, and it should be actually closer to a 24-point differential. Mm-hmm. Right now, the line sits at 14. I think I saw it hit 14.5 a little bit today. I still think that there's value on the visiting road favorite here. Memphis has a significant edge in the yards per play department also, 8.5 to the 4.9 on offense, and they only allow 4.8 to Tulane's 6.1. So all the statistical edge points to Memphis in this one, and I'll be laying 2 touchdowns with them.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis is top 25 in the S&P Plus. It's a good football team. So mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me that they're going to win the game. 14 does seem like a low number. And, the other night, it was a couple of weeks ago, you were all over them, and you love those Friday night specials.
Yeah, I love betting on Friday night.
All right, Purdue, your Boilermakers got a big win. Now they're going to go to Nebraska. We know Nebraska's hurting. Maybe Martinez will play. As you said, he's probable, mm-hmm. but he maybe played a little bit last week. Do you think Purdue's going to have a letdown going to Nebraska?
No, I mean, they started out 0-3, but like I mentioned last week, I think they were the best 0-3 team in the country, and okay. that certainly showed last week. Their defense looks much improved than it did in the first couple of weeks, and now they get to face a hobbling Adrian Martinez. And, last week against Michigan, he only threw about 50% and 22 yards through the air and an interception. Purdue's statistical edge really shows across the board in this game. They have a yards per play net margin of 1.4, where Nebraska's in the negative range at -0.2 per play. So I think that laying 3 on the road is going to be difficult for this young Purdue squad, but I don't see them losing this game, and I think they can cover that 3 pretty easily.
Yeah, 3's not a big number, so Nebraska hasn't played well all year. All right, so Notre Dame at Stanford. This is a marquee game, especially in the Midwest. Everybody's loves Notre Dame here, or Michigan, I guess. So they're going to be hosting Stanford. Stanford obviously was in the mouth of the lion there for a while at Oregon. Do you think they're going to have a letdown and when they come to South Bend?
You know, they could be in a little bit of a letdown spot. I'm sure they were all riding high after that win late Saturday night. But I think the real handicap here is the change at quarterback for the Fighting Irish.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of chatter in the offseason about how some of the pros were looking for Ian Book to take over the offense. And he did on Saturday, and their offense looked much improved. Brandon Wimbush hit the bench, and the Irish actually started finishing drives and scoring touchdowns, which is a major difference.
Yeah, when they were at home the 2 weeks prior, I think they, you know, didn't even top out at 24 points in those games, and then they just lit up Wake Forest. So I agree with this spot. 4.5 is not enough points, and they're going to be at home. Stanford, I mean, they expended a lot of energy in that game, and we'll see if their game. Although Stanford, I guess, has won the last two or three matchups against Notre Dame, regardless of where they play.
Yeah, the other point I wanted to make was this Notre Dame defense is legit. They're sixth in the S&P Plus, and their strength is really in the secondary. Stanford has shown the offense of just throwing up jump balls to Arcega Whiteside, and I don't think that's going to be very profitable on Saturday for them. S&P Plus has it as a 5-point differential, which is where the line sits, but I expect it might rise by Saturday, so definitely jump on this one early.
Okay, good tip. A game that I identified was Utah visiting Washington State. We actually gave that out as a Friday night special. That came through in terms of the spread bet, but Washington State blew the game at USC. They should have won. They were up by a couple of scores. They kind of let up, unfortunately. And they're going to come home now to a pretty good Utah squad. In the S&P, they're really close. They're, Utah's at 37. Washington State's at 41. So to me, it's basically like a pick'em game. I think they're not getting any respect. You know, they're going to get 1.5 at home. I like Washington State in that game.
Okay, I like that pick.
All right, well, let's move on to the NFL look ahead in week four. We do have some information now on yards per play. You've got the top five teams in terms of yards per play, and that's the Rams, right?
Yeah, the Rams and Washington are both at the top here. I ran some statistical analysis looking at offensive yards per play versus defense.
Gotcha.
And LA and Washington both have the top net yards per play at 1.0. And following up from there is Tampa Bay, 0.9. Miami and Cincinnati are both tied at 0.8 yards per play.
Well, those are all teams that are, you know, above 500 now. It doesn't surprise me Tampa's up there. They put up a lot of points, and same with the Rams. Miami's a little surprising. I guess that might be, a, you know, based on their opponents because they've been holding people down. Cincinnati's been scoring quite a bit, too.
So yeah, Cincinnati definitely has a pretty good offense, and a lot of their games have been going over, I've noticed.
Yeah, exactly. And then the bottom five teams in this metric, well, no surprise, Arizona, shocker, minus 1.6. Buffalo, minus 1.2. Yep. Tennessee, they've been terrible, minus 1. And then, whoa, what does this say? Is New England tied at the bottom with Indy, Oakland, and the Giants?
Yeah, you may have heard here on the podcast that the New England dynasty is turning downwards, and here it is, proof in the stats.
Wow, that's actually still surprising, but you know, with the Sunday performance where they were just putrid, and they didn't, that wasn't just the score. Brady didn't get it done. Nobody got it done. It was really an awful game. So that doesn't surprise me that, but I, when you look at those other teams on there, that is, I mean, the Giants, you know, they stink. And Oakland, you know, they've had their struggles in the second half. That's really surprising, action.
The Patriots are allowing 5.8 yards per play, and on Sunday night it really showed out against that rushing offense of Detroit. They allowed Detroit the first 100-yard rusher in the last 2.5-plus seasons.
Yeah, that's incredible. Incredible. Okay, and then let's break out performances. We already talked about some of these. I mean, Matt Ryan having the 5 touchdown passes thrown. Drew Brees had 3 touchdowns and 2 rushing touchdowns. Pat Mahomes continues to just light it up. Adrian Peterson, there's another Washington plug. He had 2 rushing touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey, he was getting it done, huh?
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson, we mentioned his running game over the New England Patriots. And Matt Breida also stood out in the DR listings on footballoutsiders.com.
Yeah, he's been pretty good. Now, they're going to have to lean on him quite a bit now with Jimmy G out. We'll see how that offense looks. I don't think it's going to be as good as he was doing before, but he may get a lot of touches, a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, he picked up a slight knock, too, with a hyperextended knee on Sunday, so you have to watch his availability.
Okay, it looks like you're eyeing Cincy as an over team. They're 3-0 to the over through three games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've already looked ahead at the over in the Cincinnati game this weekend. They face off against the Atlanta Falcons, and total opened at 49, and it's already been bet up a little bit, so I'll keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta, besides the opening game, you know, they've been giving up some points. It's definitely a way to go. And Cincinnati, I thought they were better defense than they are, I guess. It's kind of interesting. When you look at the game against Carolina last week, they actually played fairly well from a yardage standpoint, but they kept giving up touchdowns. I mean, Cam alone, you know, he threw for two and he ran for two. So it was one of those things that they can't keep somebody out of the end zone for some reason.
Yeah, the Carolina running game finally got going last weekend against Cincinnati. The other thing I'll point out in this one is the defensive injuries for the Atlanta Falcons. They lost another key contributor, Ricardo Allen, on Sunday.
Yep.
Take that away from their safety and linebackers that are out as well. And I don't see how this one stays under at all.
Exactly, no doubt. All right, and then for the spots for the NFL, we've got the Vikings +7 at the LA Rams. That's obviously... it could be an NFC Championship preview game, although we've talked about it. There's some injuries on one side, and then you've got the dude who's getting mentally evaluated on the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a tough spot, but you like Cousins, huh?
Yeah, the Vikings pass it on nearly 73% of their plays, and with the LA Rams' two top cornerbacks being out, I think that they're going to make some hay on Thursday night. And 7 points, although I think LA may win this game, is a lot for them to cover against a game Vikings squad.
Yeah, Vikings have to bounce back after last week. They have to play better. So, yeah, it does seem like a big number.
Mm-hmm. The next one I had pointed out here was the Monday night game. Kansas City, although they've been hot, travels on the road for a division game against Denver. And right now they're sitting at 5.5-point favorites. Division dogs on home in primetime. All these things line up for the Denver Broncos to cover this game pretty handily, and I'll be betting on them without a doubt.
I have to agree with you there. I mean, we love Mahomes. He's the man. But at some point, he's going to hit the skids. I mean, he's going to have a rough game. Von Miller, he could get after him this game. And I would anticipate, like you said, in Denver, the crowd will be rocking. It'll be a great Monday night atmosphere. He might make some mistakes, and he hasn't done that so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've talked about some reverse line movement with the Texans and the Colts.
Yeah, I noticed on Sunday that the Indianapolis Colts opened up for this big divisional matchup as 2.5-point favorites, and I've been eyeing the movements all over the past couple of days. And although 70% of the bets are coming in on Indianapolis, the line has actually dropped from 2.5 to the current level of 1.5, and even seeing some ones pop up across the board. That signals to me that there's sharp money on the Houston Texans. Although it is still early in the week, they could be setting up a spot to come back on Indianapolis. But I think that J.J. Watt looked good. There's been a lot of chatter about how Andrew Luck's arm isn't really looking up to par. You obviously saw him come out at the end of the game for the Hail Mary.
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett went in. Right?
And I think that some sharps are picking up on Houston being in a must-win spot, coming into Indianapolis, and that's where the money is coming in at least so far.
Now, is that a steam movement? We talked about that earlier. Is that, would this be characterized as that or not?
I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as a steam move quite yet, because some of the books are across the board. Typically, that is a across the board unanimous move.
Okay.
I'm just looking at the bet percentages versus the movement itself.
I gotcha. I said this last week for the Texans. I thought they were in a must win last week. So now they are. I mean, you're 0-3. Of the 0-3 teams, I can't believe they're the one that they're in there. So they've got to win a game, and if they don't win this game, they're definitely not making the playoffs. There's no question. All right, the next game is Miami versus New England. This is another one of our head-to-head spots. Miami is getting 7 in New England. We've talked about New England and the net yards per play. They are struggling, and Miami's playing great football. So where are you at on this one?
We talked about already New England's poor run defense, and although the numbers don't really bear it out for Miami, I did a little bit of reading today, and I actually watched a replay of that Miami-Oakland game, and they're running a lot of these short little flip passes.
I think they've been calling
the pop pass. Mm-hmm. Yeah, shovel pass is another term for it, where Tannehill just stands there and flips it to one of his wide receivers, either Albert Wilson running through or Jakeem Grant. So those are really kind of like running plays.
Yep.
And I expect Miami Miami to keep this one close. I know they're New England. I know they're the Patriots. Tom Brady coming home off of two straight losses. But 7 points as this number is just way too high. A lot of inflation there, and I'll scoop up the 7 every time with the Dolphins here.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I mean, until Edelman comes back or a quality second option in the passing game, because Hogan's kind of disappeared, I don't see them continuing to put up the points like they've done in the past years. And lastly, Miami's playing good football, so I like this call here.
Mm-hmm. The last one I picked out here was the Sunday night game where Baltimore is traveling to Pittsburgh, and another huge division game on Sunday Night Football. And Pittsburgh right now is listed as a 3.5-point favorite. The total is 51.
Yeah, that both teams are actually, well, we know Pittsburgh can score, but Baltimore's actually been putting up a ton of points too. And they're doing it, I heard that they're 12 for 12 in the red zone on touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're getting their points. And the Steelers, we've seen it time and time again. Last night they came through with turnovers early, but they gave up a ton of yards in the second half, still gave up 27 points in the game. So that total is definitely in jeopardy. And then do you like Baltimore in that game?
I love Baltimore. Pittsburgh defense has been pretty poor. They give up 5.9 yards per play. And although Baltimore's offense hasn't been stellar through three games, they have the number one rated defense, only giving up 4.3 yards per play. And these games have been close year in and year out, no matter the location, no matter the venue. If you can get 3.5 points on an underdog, I could see Baltimore winning this game outright.
Yeah, and it's the key number too, right? So 3.5, you're getting the hooks. You're in good shape there. All right, so our Survivor segment, we weren't good last week, but maybe we can bounce back this week. So you think Jacksonville is a good pick this week?
Yeah, Jacksonville coming back home this week and coming off a tough loss to Tennessee. They play the New York Jets and the rookie Sam Darnold. I think Jacksonville's defense maybe handles Darnold pretty easily.
You're probably right on that one. I feel good. I think the other pick we have is the Chargers. I feel better about that. This is obviously the Jimmy G-less San Francisco 49ers going to the Chargers. We do know that the Chargers really don't have a home field advantage because nobody shows up to their games, unfortunately. However, that team is good. And as bad as the defense has been, the C.J. Beathard-led Niners are not going to get it done down south in L.A.
Yeah, another sneaky pick, maybe the Chicago Bears. Yeah. Fitzpatrick coming into Chicago to face off against that vaunted defense. I think they may be in trouble on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think the Bears are going to win that game and should be, well, we all love Fitzmagic and he's kind of crazy, but I think they're going to beat him up pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's do the head-to-head segment now. We've got a couple different picks here. Ohio State is they're 4-point favorites at Penn State. So who do you like in that one, Action?
Well, I've done a little bit of analysis in this one too, and in the S&P, it looks like Ohio State really should be closer to about an 8-point favorite.
Okay.
And although I know they're going on the road, and this is going to be a huge spot for Penn State, I'm going to be taking the Ohio State Buckeyes and Haskins to win this game by more than 4.
You're on Mikey's side on this one, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, I do like Ohio State in this game, too. We talked about that a little bit off air. We got to pick a side. But, you know, Penn State, they're ranked 6th in the S&P+. They're a really good team. They basically blew the game last year when they had Saquon Barkley in the gang, when they had Ohio State in town. So I think that they're going to keep it close enough. It's a key number being 4, so at least if you know, keep within a field goal. So I'll take Penn State in this one.
Okay. Well, that should be a good one on Saturday night. The next game we have on the board is the aforementioned West Virginia Mountaineers traveling to Lubbock, Texas to take on the Red Raiders.
Well, you know, I'm usually America's underdog like I was in the Penn State game, but this one, I'm going with the Mountaineers. I like that guy with the beard. I like Clipboard Jesus number 2 coming through.
Well, I can tell you what, though. I've been looking at this spot, and I had this one closer to a pick 'em. Mm-hmm. And when it opened on Sunday, I think I told you I jumped all over Texas Tech plus 6.
Oh, wow, plus 6.
But even though we're grading this one at 4, which is where the line currently sits, I'll still take the 4 in the Red Raiders gladly.
Yeah, regardless of who wins this game, that total of 77.5, this should be a complete shootout. It should be a lot of fun. Probably the team who has the ball last will win. So I think it should be a fun one.
Yeah, how about some overtime? That would be fun.
Absolutely. All right, so now we've got Miami at New England. New England is giving up the 7 points. They're at home. What say you, Action?
Well, I think I talked about this one ad nauseum earlier in the pod, so I'll be taking the Dolphins plus 7.
Yeah, I can see that too. However, I just have to stick with the same narrative that is New England going to lose three straight games? Is that possible at home now? I can't see them doing that. Now, granted, seven's a big number. I agree with you 100%. But maybe Tom Brady starts, you know, he does his whatever diet and does a couple extra of those core exercises, and Giselle gets on him, and maybe he actually makes it happen and they win by eight.
He'll eat a couple of extra plants this week for you.
That's right. That's right. All right, the last game is actually the first game. We should have lived off with it. Is the Thursday night special. We're doing the big Minnesota at the Rams. The Rams are 6.5-point favorites. They're at home. And in this case, where do you like this one, actually?
Well, as we talked about, the line opened at 7. And for full clarity, I will tell you, listeners, I did already bet the Vikings at +7. But here for the head-to-head, we're going to grade it at 6.5. And Wags and I discussed it before the pod. And I'll be taking the Rams -6.5. I'm hoping that it lands on 7 and I can push that one at least.
Well, I've been pretty good in the head-to-head so far. I'm happy to take Minnesota in this case. I do think Minnesota's got to be angry after what happened. I don't know if they win the game, though. I just think they're going to keep it close enough. As you said before, the Rams' corners are injured. They're going to have some opportunities to get the ball to Thielen and Diggs, and Diggs got bottled up last week. So I think that they're going to keep this game close enough for me to get this one from you.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's some injuries and potential Everson Griffin being out, mm-hmm. and the total right now is 49.5. I think there's some value in the over in this one as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think so too. All right, let's change gears. We got a couple other sports to talk about. First and foremost, we're going to talk about the Ryder Cup. I'll go very quickly over this, but you know, the Ryder Cup basically changed formats in 1979 to include all of Europe with England against the United States. Since that time, we are 8-11 against them. In the Ryder Cup, they play every 2 years, and they put these teams together where they have a unique match play format where they play both foursomes, which are basically they alternate shots, four ball, which is basically they take the best score of the two players on each hole, and then just singles, single matches. Unfortunately, the U.S. has been 3-8 since 1995. However, the odds are saying that U.S. is favored at -150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Europe is a +150 underdog. Early on in this competition, there had been a ton of really close matches where it has been basically a coin flip. But more recently, in the last few events, one team or the other has won pretty handily. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to pick a side, I think that you're probably going to be going to the underdog Europeans here. And the U.S. has never won in Europe as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. They've never won in Europe, and they basically have only won a few in the last few rounds. I would take Europe in this one for sure. Mm-hmm. +150.
Another interesting prop that I was reading about today is the U.S. to take the lead first. I believe the first competition this year is going to be the morning four ball session, mm-hmm. which the U.S. has historically dominated in this session. Mm. So going into that with the best ball session first, you can take the U.S. to take the first lead at -130. And that's something I may be throwing some pocket change on.
Why not? Why not? Make a little cash. All right. How about some soccer updates, action? You love the soccer. We all know that.
Yeah, the EPL has not been good to me recently, so I've decided to stay away from that competition this week.
Yeah, get out of there.
And Champions League has started up. Okay. Last week, there were games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and the next couple of games are the first week in October. So I believe they're October 3rd and October 4th. And one team in particular that I've been watching closely, because they are my favorite team, is Juventus. And one thing I've noticed is that their defense has not been quite as formidable as they used to be when Gigi Buffon was manning the net.
Okay.
He was their longtime goalkeeper and really the best goalie in Europe for a decade or more. And he's moved on now, and currently they're giving up a little bit more goals than they have recently.
Okay.
On Tuesday, they played Young Boys from Switzerland, and I was looking at some advanced lines expecting this goal total to open up at 3,
okay.
almost even money.
Mm-hmm.
And if I see a 3 pop in the market, I'll definitely be jumping all over that. I think Juventus could easily score 3 themselves, and if Young Boys get on the score sheet, I think it easily goes over 3.
All right, that's a good spot. All right, well, that wraps up episode 6 of the Side Action Podcast. Thanks for joining us. We have seen of some ratings, so I really appreciate the listeners who are rating the podcast. That really helps us out and go up the list for us. But definitely follow us as well on Twitter at Side Action Pod. We do put out picks. Action puts out its picks of the day, and we've been hitting pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're just one game over 500 now, but we're trending in the positive direction.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, so please continue to rate the pod. Pass it around to your friends. We're trying to get to the second level here to get a following.
And certainly help us out with some second layer marketing. I know some of you have been talking about it in your home cities and telling about the podcast to your gambling friends. We even have a listener who downloaded from Canada this week.
Ooh,
so
exciting.
We're going even more international.
That's right. That's right. We're spanning the continent and the globe now. So, well, yeah. So definitely follow us at Side Action Pod. You can follow me, Wegs, at Wegs Pool on Twitter.
And you can follow me, Steve Action Roberts, at 31S Roberts.
All right, everybody. Well, good luck this weekend in your bets, and hopefully we'll hear from you on one of the social media outlets.
Yeah, good luck, everybody. Let's win some money this week. That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.